With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
I don't want a quattroporte.
Yes, you do.
No, I mean, I actually don't.
You actually don't. You actually don't. But
a car, I'm intrigued enough. Like, I'm 39% there intrigued by it. But
yes,
I don't want to own one.
Well, what am I gonna... too bad. Too bad. We've been saying for a while about this big sedan challenge thing. We've been saying for a while that we changed it to a quattroporte for you. It's always been a fate for me. We changed it to a quattroporte for you. We said if we really would like, honestly, I'm going to say it again, we really would like 10 grand. That gives us a level of confidence is too strong a word, but a level of financial, like, okay, we're okay with moving in on this. We know there's going to be money from the show going into this. But we did say that if it broke 8 grand, we're doing it either way. And we are men of our word. And happy Tuesday, 3 days ago, one of you looked at the total and realized it was a little over $400 away from 8 grand even, and you made it 8 grand even. And we looked
at each other and went,
gulp.
That's actually happening because now I'm imagining flights will be booked.
Yeah.
Cars will happen. So this is a call to action of all call to actions.
Okay.
Start shopping, everybody.
Yeah.
If you find one in your area and you have a good one, you guys have already been sending us quattroportes and phaetons. I can't believe. I'm going to make a shirt called the Pickle Fork Company.
There you go. I like that. That's good.
I'm thinking about taking their logo and kind of doing something weird with it.
You
hopefully the corporate lawyers won't chew on me. But
if they're paying that much attention,
we'll see.
That would be hysterical.
All I'm doing is promoting. I'm going to say Maserati so many times, I can't even tell you.
Yes.
But you guys have been sending us already ads, and there's one that came through that has really gotten under Todd's skin in a good and bad way. I think you're like 49% there
on
Phaeton. Imagine yourself a Phaeton owner.
I know.
I'm a Phaeton owner.
But I want to clarify real quick. This is only up for about another week. Okay, the GoFundMe is only up for about another week. This is last gasp. Please know that it's happening, but please know if you help us get even closer to 10 grand, you have genuinely helped the show. This is happening either way. We're men of our word. We are legitimately shopping for these cars as of this podcast.
I cannot.
We are looking for the right ones. We may enlist your help as a listener if there is one near. I mean, once we have ones we like is too strong a word. Once we have ones that may work, we may enlist you, the listeners, to even be our pre-purchase inspections. Not because we expect them to be great, but just so we at least know what we're getting into.
Well, you know, we'll start with the basics.
Does it start?
Does it roll?
In the case of the Phaeton, is it a leaning bus? Because one of the air shots is done.
Well, there's going to be you know, maybe the hot list of here's the things it's got to do. And then if it has these nice-to-haves, great. But if, you know, some windows don't roll down and that door is quite not aligned and, you know,
these
other
things
aren't missing, there's plastic trim pieces missing,
nobody
cracked
cares.
Windshield, whatever, we're kind of expecting that. It's part of the story and they'll laugh
sure.
and I
yeah.
can't believe. Thank you guys, really, for making this happen.
It's amazing. It's
I was
truly
not
amazing.
Convinced. I admit.
I agree. I agree with you.
Publicly, I was not convinced. Mm-hmm. I thought we're just going to, we're pushing everybody's money back and ha-ha, we tried.
This was funny. Yeah.
You know, all right. It was just an experiment.
It's a thing now.
Flights are going to be booked. We're going to be flying to some city.
We are.
And driving these things back.
Well, and then starting a series of conversation about them as our cars.
The question was brought up during the Atlanta meetup. By the way, we just got back from the Atlanta meetup.
It's
thanks
so
to all of you for coming. And we've got a big debrief coming for Topic Tuesday The question was brought up at the Atlanta meetup, should I safari-ize the Quattroporte? And that is a car that I think nobody has ever safari-ized.
No.
Which is quite delicious to me. That's you know, a giant light bar and roof rack and mud flaps and maybe a shaker hood and a big old intake. You know, let's go a little bit, you know, hot rod with it. Oh, wow. Well,
I'm literally looking
you're
up.
You're shopping.
I'm looking
you're turning
up
the laptop around, showing me.
I'm actually
me
shopping because we're talking about it. It's got me shopping while we're actually on the podcast. It's frightening.
there's a bunch of dead air while we're
there's
know,
a bunch,
looking
there's
at
a I'm saving tabs. I mean, this is actually happening.
Oh, my gosh.
Much to both of our surprise and chagrin and excitement.
Coming.
And excitement. All of the above, because there's a lot of content coming.
There is. No, no, no. Do not mistake any of this fear for we don't want to do this, because we absolutely do.
Yeah.
And maybe more ideas will come out of it. We have at least three pieces of content,
yes,
not to mention the initial pickup.
Yes.
And so we're working through how will that all work, and we'll keep you guys posted.
Totally.
It's now becoming a life of its own. So
and
start shopping, everyone.
And you guys are the reason it's happening. Truthfully.
Absolutely.
I have to discuss this progression again, and thank you guys, because this is truthfully content coming because you guys asked and provided the way.
Mm-hmm.
We threw it out as a crazy idea. You guys, as our audience through our Discord forum, said you guys should do a GoFundMe and structure it like this, which we've done because we thought that's actually a really great idea. Then you guys, the audience, showed up to fund it, and halfway along the way helped it revise to now be the Quattroporte that is, honestly,
it's
happened, it's the perfect car for Paul. So you guys have been
company.
You guys have made a very specific contribution to this across the board, whether it's been monetary or otherwise.
I cannot believe it. Thank you
again. But we should move on from crazy sedans, because there will be much coverage of said crazy sedans. But we should move on to the madness. We promised it last podcast. By the way, we're obviously back in the studio. We promised it last podcast to tell you all of the difficulty. Let me set the stage real quick. We went to Atlanta. Okay, I grew up in Texas. I'm from the South. We went to Atlanta, which is also the South, the heart of the South, to shoot pickup trucks. Because honestly, on the surface, what's easier to find in Atlanta than pickup trucks?
Yeah.
And we kind of went, we wanted to do a pickup truck episode this for season six anyway. And we started to have a conversation about places we were going to be while we were shooting season six. And then we both looked at each other and went, Atlanta is the perfect place to find pickup trucks. And you listening are probably thinking that with us. Like, why not?
It just seemed easy. And so I'm spending at least the last 4 to 6 weeks from this podcast.
At least 6 weeks.
Searching, scouring. I'm trying all my tricks, all the methods, because FCA was the company that was able to drive a brand new 2020 Ram 1500 from Detroit to Atlanta. Yes, you listening.
Yep.
They drove a brand new pickup from Detroit out to Atlanta just so we could shoot it there. Thank you, FCA.
Yes, they
were
phenomenal. We
got big supporters out of them.
Yep, yep, yep.
And then over the course of the 2 weeks, I mean, I'm spending hours trying to find, because ideally you want to have the cars locked down before you step on an airplane. We're spending a lot of time and money to come see you guys in Atlanta for the East Coast meetup. And then we want to have trucks sort of guaranteed so we know the shoot will be happening, because, you know, ultimately that means deliverables to Discover. We have to commit to them.
Yes, we do.
For the episode. So we have to know that, and I've told you, you know, we don't have an episode till we're done shooting it.
We don't.
Just because the cars are scheduled, that doesn't mean anything.
True.
They can go away for all kinds of reasons.
Well, and to your point, what you're talking about happens every single time we shoot a comparison, from when they were on YouTube to when they're now on television.
Yeah.
It starts, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months, sometimes 3+ months out from the shoot dates. We are chasing press cars. And sometimes it comes together fairly straightforward and quick. At other times it comes together in the last week or two. And we pull off, here's one on Turo, or you know what, that manufacturer now can get one. But up until we pick up the cars from the manufacturer, which is essentially from the press fleets at the park and fly or whatever at the local airport, until we get that point, we still aren't certain that when we're getting press cars, we're going to get the press car we asked for, and it's going to be there at the lot.
It could switch. Well,
totally.
Here's the
totally
biggest thing of all, and that is a lot of people have access to these particular press cars, and they're used by lots of journalists and lots of people. And so if somebody accidentally wrecks the car, or it goes out of commission for some sort of failure for whatever reason, suddenly that car that we've scheduled and been promised, well, it's out of the press fleet's control, and they're apologetic, but there's nothing they can do.
Absolutely.
So it sends us scrambling. So I feel like I've been fighting to get these trucks assembled, and it's inexplicable. So what we did when we landed, we did not have anything from GM. We had something from Ford scheduled. We had FCA generously driving this Ram out. Mm-hmm. And it was an EcoDiesel, the brand new 3-liter V6 EcoDiesel. Yes. And so they drove this truck out. And so we landed and didn't have a plan. Well, we had some ideas, but we didn't have one further. We didn't have a truck scheduled at that point when we landed in Atlanta.
Yes. We had Ford. We had Dodge. You guys need to understand, 48 hours before we got on a plane, we officially got word from GM, we're sorry, we can't have a Silverado for your comparison in Atlanta. 48 mm-hmm. hours before we left.
Yeah.
Now, prior to that, seeing that this might not work, Paul had already been working on other approaches.
I've got all kinds of tricks up my sleeve that I use.
We chased Turo. We chased rentals.
You name the idea. Yes. I have tried it and chased it and fallen flat on my face.
And one of the fallbacks that you tried was there was a rental car company. I won't name them, but there's a rental car company that they actually list Silverados in their pickup rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And not all rental companies do. You would think they all do, but all of them list Ford F-150 or similar, essentially.
Yes, yes.
But this one listed Silverados. And so you put in a listing from this rental company for a Silverado. And you specifically said, look, it's not an or similar situation. I need a Silverado.
It's hard to specify with rental companies.
Yes,
I get that.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason for the wording or similar.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But I was talking to the agent, the reservation agent, put it in the customer notes. I asked at the counter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, folks at rental car companies, they're not really keeping track of brands because, honestly, it really doesn't matter when you rent a car. For us, it matters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, you know, for most people, it's or similar is fine unless, you know, you're at a top level and you do kind of want a particular car. And that's when they go into the, you know, the higher end cars, I'll say. And then mm-hmm. you do want that Corvette or you do want a 911 or whatever. And then mm-hmm. you get to specify the particular car. Pickup trucks are not in that category.
No.
So here we were landing in Atlanta, kind of freaked out, picking up the first truck, thinking, all right, what's next?
Well, that gets worse because we went to this rental company for the Silverado first because that was the biggest wild card. And we actually got all – and here's the thing. The counter upstairs at the airport doesn't actually know the cars down in the garage.
Mm-mm.
So you got to do all the rental paperwork and sign all the thing and see what the nasty number is with insurance and everything else included and choke
so
on that
expensive.
For a minute. Then go down to get the car.
Mm-hmm.
We go down looking specifically for a Silverado. And wouldn't you know it, I'm not kidding you when I say this, the only trucks they have are Dodge Rams.
Well, they're not even brand new. So they're 2 or 3 years old.
And we have the Ram.
And that's fine, but we needed the brand new 2020 Ram,
uh-huh.
which, again, FCA provided.
We
they
had.
Were all in, and
thank you again
mm-hmm. to them. They've just bent over backwards, honestly. I mean, to send somebody out to drive that all the way from Detroit to Atlanta, mm-hmm. that's a big deal.
Totally, absolutely.
So we thank them highly. So, you know, we're at that point. The rental fleet does not have any Silverados. So Todd and I are discussing ideas, and we settle on approaching a dealership.
Because we can pick up the Ford, which we do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We are going to pick up the Ram later, which that's going to come back around. Remember, the Ram's the only one that we have for sure, but that's coming back around later. Wait for it. So we pick up the F-150, and we decide, let's do literally, this is the backstop last good idea.
Backstop is a great way of putting it.
Go to the local Chevy dealer in Atlanta. They don't know we're coming, by the way. Like, literally looked up the one closest to the airport, drove to it, and walked in. By the way, drove to it, parked in a Ford F-150, walked in the front door, and asked for the general manager.
Now, this particular dealership, which will remain unnamed at this point,
to their benefit, yes.
Didn't bite because we wanted to simply borrow a truck that we would put very few miles on. And, you know, we thought, how about a demo truck?
Mm-hmm.
And so they, you know, after a few rounds of going back and forth, which is the same kind of thing when you buy a truck or buy a car, there's this like, well, I got to go in and check with the big dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then walk back out. Well, what about this question? Oh, I don't know. I got to go walk back in and check with the big dogs. Like, could you send the guy out who makes the decisions? I don't want to talk to you anymore. How about you send the guy out?
We got the dealer run around while not buying a car. And look, on one level, I understand this is a weird big ask. And that was what we said to the receptionist. Let me explain to you how odd this is. It's a weird big ask. But at the same time, every dealer you've ever been to, they have different people that work for the dealer that are all driving demos. There's
mm-hmm.
demos all over the lot that are various things. So we're not asking for a car that is brand new about to be sold. We're asking for something that's being used in the dealer loan demo program.
You can put a few miles on.
We need it for 48 hours.
Yeah. So after that was a bust, we left that Chevy dealership mm-hmm. and went around the corner to what was the equivalent of a day spa. We went from a slaughterhouse, and we walked into the door
of
Hennessy Mazda Buick GMC in Morrow, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was honestly like walking into a day spa. And once we walked in, I want to give a big shout out to Aaron Powell. He's mm-hmm. in sales there.
Yep.
And he could sense some urgency, and it wasn't the usual, "Hi, how can I help you?" It was more of a, he sensed something going on, mm-hmm.
yeah,
looking at
credit,
us.
To his credit, yeah.
And he was genuinely sort of, there's something going on with you guys.
How can I help you guys? What do you guys need?
What's on your mind?
Yeah, for sure.
Aaron, thank you so much for helping us out. He listened to our story and immediately went to get Andrew Regan, who is the marketing director at all of Hennessy Automobile Companies.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew came out. He also listened to our story and he said, "You know what? You know, this was 5:30. He was walking out the door. I mean, we caught him with his
yes.
jacket and bag on his arm, walking out end of the day.
Yes, he was headed to his car.
And we just said, hey, we're falling at your feet. Here's what we need. We do want to mm-hmm. represent GM. And to be honest, there's good reason to visit a GMC dealer for the features that are on the new Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, could we just borrow one out of your fleet? We need something not full on. You know, we don't need the Denali.
No.
We need something that is
we need mid-grade.
Decently priced, mid-grade.
Yep.
What do you got? Can you help us out?
Mm-hmm.
And both you guys, Aaron and Andrew, you helped us out tremendously. And Andrew said, let me think about it. I'll get back to you in a couple hours. Need to talk to the general manager.
Yeah, we needed to talk to the GM.
But
so,
it was a, I want to help you guys. That was from both these guys. It was a, I want to help. I'm sensing you're in a bind.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, you know, I want to get something out of it kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was just, we genuinely want to help you out.
And there was a demeanor that suggests, look, we'd like to make this work. We need to see if we can.
Mm-hmm,
whereas the
sure.
other dealer was like, all the reasons that they'd really like us to leave now. I mean, it was a resounding difference.
Yeah.
And everything about that experience was very nice and had suggestion of help. Wasn't a guarantee, but suggestion of help, which is
yeah.
not the experience we'd had at the prior Chevy dealer. So we left mm-hmm. thinking, okay, we have the Ford.
Mm-hmm.
We're driving the Ford currently.
Yeah.
We need to call the press fleet guy to confirm the location of the ramp because we've left the airport and there was a lot of discussion about it.
Which we did.
Because, here's the trick, because the Dodge, remember, had been driven down from Detroit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It arrived in Atlanta with a crack in its windshield. Now, when you are a press fleet, the press fleet folks are obsessed, to their credit, and we appreciate it, with delivering a pristine car.
Mm-hmm, right.
So the minute they saw a crack in this windshield, they mentioned it to Dodge, who overnighted a new windshield to arrive in Atlanta the same day we did.
Can't believe
to be put into the car. So we have to call them to figure out where is this truck with a new windshield.
Right.
And
right.
we call, and we find out that the windshield that was shipped arrived more broken than the one on the truck.
Well, what that meant was we couldn't have the truck because, again, in any product representation, you want to put that product into journalists' hands or media or whoever with in pristine condition. Here it is, brand new, fully representative. And a cracked windshield can happen to anybody. We're not holding that against anybody.
It happens. For sure. Of course it does.
So, okay, we can still drive the truck, no problem. You can still evaluate a truck with a broken windshield.
Yep.
That's our headspace. And so we were able to convince the press fleet to say, look, you know, we can use it anyway. We can shoot around it. You're never, ever going to notice. If you listen to the podcast, you're going to know, but you're never going to notice on camera.
It'll be a challenge to ever see it, for sure. Totally agree.
So the truck looks great. They agree to give it to us. And then he mentions, well, I've got a 1500 Chevy. I said, wait,
yeah.
what? I thought you said you mm-hmm. had a 2500. 2500 is too big. That's
yeah.
the
yeah,
HD.
Yeah.
I can't use
can't
the
have
HD.
That.
It's
yep.
too big. I need the 1500 for comparison purposes.
Oh,
he said,
I've got
it. I've got it.
Problem
solved, right?
Because for 2 weeks, we'd heard that the press fleet guy wasn't sure. He didn't have one. He only had the 2500. He wasn't sure he could help us. And then GM 48 hours prior, remember, if you remember the story, back in chapter one, GM said, can't help you. Now, the Atlanta guy, Renee, by the way, Renee's awesome.
He
truly
phenomenal.
Worked as hard as he possibly
he
could
really
for
did.
Us.
He really did. He bent over backwards. By the way, Renee is the guy when Petit Le Mans at Road Atlanta
yep.
happened.
Yep, yep.
Rene was the guy delivering all the corporate vehicles to the bigwigs flying in to drive around Atlanta during
yep.
the Petit Le Mans race.
So he actually has tried really hard for us. But he's like, no, I actually do have a 1500 in the fleet now. And we're like, well, if you do, then that's what we need. We need the 1500 Silverado. That's what we've been asking for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why you suddenly have it now, but okay, great. So right about the time he says, yeah, I've got it for you, and we plan when to get both these trucks, wouldn't you know it, Hennessy GMC calls back. Mm-hmm. And Andrew says, I can help you out.
Great.
So now
phenomenal.
We have to tell him, can we put you on reserve? Because we actually might have it from press fleet. But I said to him exactly what was going on. I said, look, we weren't supposed to get one from this press fleet, and we're pretty sure it's a 2,500 out of 1,500. Until we get confirmation, can we leave you on hold?
Mm-hmm. Well, the press fleet came back and said, Renee said, it is a 1,500. You can have it. And by the way, all this happened in the space of about 11 minutes.
Yes, this was the fastest flurry of changes for because
talk
we
about
went from,
emotions. We're yes, we have it. No, we don't. Yes, we have it. No, we don't.
Well, it started with we might have a GMC. We're sitting in a Ford. We literally pulled off at a gas station, just kind of trying to debrief this. We're sitting in the Ford F-150. We don't have a Dodge because it's got a broken windshield. Mm-hmm. Oh, you want it with the broken windshield? Oh, what about the Silverado? Oh, wait, you can have that. By the way, what about GMC? 10 minutes.
Andrew, thank you again. GMC is on reserve at this point. We think we've got it. And mm-hmm. then suddenly there comes another text that we're not allowed to use the Chevy.
That is in Atlanta. That is what we need.
Indeed a 1500 because it's not a 4x4.
Mm-hmm.
And from an apples to apples comparison point of view, it needs to be a 4x4, which I understand.
I get it. Yeah.
I'd rather have the new truck to represent. Mm-hmm. And the ride quality, as you mentioned, will actually be better. It theoretically would be better and, you know, better suited for in-town traffic.
I don't
know, man. You know, we're speculating here, but yeah. I understand from a corporate point of view, you want 4x4s all, you know, across the board to be reviewed.
As better we can match them, the better. I do admit that.
Which is true. And we agree with that.
Mm-hmm,
but,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it comes down to getting the vehicle versus not, I'm willing to just caveat that on camera.
We would much prefer, and we, as you can see, we fight for these comparisons. We would much prefer to have a shoot than lose a car on a technicality. And we were down to technicality.
Mm-hmm.
But GM didn't want to give us a mismatched truck.
And so again, now, fair. It's a fair point.
They're well within their rights to do that.
Absolutely.
So at that point, we're now calling Hennessy to say, just kidding, we really do need the Sierra.
So, therefore, we did get the Sierra from Hennessy. Thanks again to you guys. We were in a bind, and it was just like, no problem. Here you go. We found mm-hmm. an SLT. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Here it is.
Yep.
Please, you know, give it back to us when you're done.
Return it shiny side up. Yeah.
It's fine, and there were no problems whatsoever, and we used it successfully. And mm-hmm. So thanks to those guys for pulling through for us. So I will say if, you know, you want to go to the day spa equivalent of a dealership and you're in the market, these guys will definitely take care of you. I'm fully confident. There was no rush, no pressure. It was just sort of like, yeah, we can do
Let's
that.
Let's get that done. Yeah. And
help you out.
And I'll say this. We were there to shoot pickups. I saw at least 3 brand new, nice, colored Miata RFs in the parking lot.
Tasty.
If you're shopping Miata RFs anywhere near Atlanta, I'm telling you right now, they have them. They looked great. I wanted to buy one, and I wasn't even there for that purpose.
I had to keep yanking you in. No,
totally.
No, we're shooting pickup trucks this way.
Yes.
Get away from the
but
Miatas.
But ultimately, we ended up with these 3 trucks. So we had the Ford F-150. It was a Lariat, so that's mid-grade. We had the Dodge Ram 1500 that came down from Detroit, and we had the GMC Sierra with the cool new tailgate, and we drove them nowhere you expect.
Exactly.
We didn't tow. We didn't haul. We acted like good old Southern boys with a commute.
You betcha.
And we commuted them in downtown Atlanta. That we discussed them. Let's be honest. I grew up in this. Many of you in the South understand this, where people have a pickup, and maybe they use it to haul, and maybe they tow with it. But mainly what it is, they bought it instead of a car.
Mm-hmm.
It is their commute vehicle. So we commuted in them in downtown Atlanta midweek.
Well, so that's an episode coming at you for season 6. And we were also there to shoot another episode, as a matter of fact, at the Porsche Experience in Atlanta, which is at the east end of the Atlanta Airport runway. And this was also the Avengers headquarters in the trailer for Captain America Civil War and the Avengers Endgame, the Aerotropolis, essentially.
Yeah.
It's OPD, One Porsche Drive. That building is cool and modern, and
very,
that is the
very,
Avengers
very
headquarters.
Cool, yeah.
So there's some folks there that really made this happen mm-hmm. because we wanted to come experience. Many of you have asked, hey, have you guys done the experience from Porsche in LA or Atlanta? Have you done any of these? We said no, and so we had contacted them knowing we'd be there and have a free afternoon. So thanks to Jade Logan, she is the Porsche Cars North America corporate spokesperson, as well as Aaron Clougherty, event sales and marketing manager. And it was Frank Wiesman, who is the spokesperson for the 911 Boxster and Cayman, who really helped us, along with Luke VandeZandy.
Yep.
He's also the spokesperson for the Panamera, Macan, and Cayenne.
Those guys were great.
That made everything happen. We showed up. They mm-hmm. showed us the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
they really, really helped out. And yep. as a matter of fact, yep. Frank joined us for dinner
that evening. It was great.
But I also want to call out the driving coaches at the Porsche Experience Atlanta. First of all, Craig Duffy, thank you for giving us, you know, here's what's possible, here's what's not.
The limitations, the realities of shooting there.
We've had people shooting here before. Here's what you need to do.
I teased Craig. I said, I just kind of, when he was done giving us the full description. By the way, you only talk for about 30 seconds and you have to be quiet for 30 because the plane's going overhead and you can't hear anything.
Right.
Everybody suddenly just become a silent movie. But I sidled over next to Craig when he was done explaining and I just said, with kind of a smile on my face, I said, I'm going to ask this question because I'm going to hate if I didn't. But I really can't fly my drone here, can I? And he went, please, please don't.
The everyday driver guys are flying their drones. We would shut down traffic for the entire Eastern Seaboard.
Yes.
As well as all international traffic going in and out of Europe. And that would be fun.
He said to me, he said, a lot of people ask seriously. And I said, I'm not asking seriously because I can see the plane and I know about air traffic and it's not happening. But I said, I just almost for the look on your face, I have to ask. And all of them got a laugh. But anyway, yeah.
Well, then there's two more driving coaches that are on camera with both Todd and I, and they had us in the experience. So we drove the brand new 992 and the Cayenne S on both the track and driving exercises and the off-road experience, and that is Kyler Graham, thank you, man, and Tyler Fling. Both these guys are driving coaches, and you can go to Porsche Experience Atlanta and request them by name, Kyler and Tyler.
Great.
Say, jump in the car with me, show me everything. You're going to envy their job, as a matter of fact.
But sure.
During the entire 90 minutes, they act not just as driving instructors, but they're psychologists and mentors and life coaches.
All of the above.
To pull the best out of you. So go ask for them by name. Thank you all to the Porsche Experience Atlanta. And I know that you probably have not heard their names, but you can go there, ask for all these folks by name and tell them, hey, you know, can't wait to see the episode. I want to do what Paul and Todd did. Show me, give me the business. What do they do?
It was fascinating because it's going to be kind of like our Speed Vegas episode was in season 5, where we go and we do the experience. We talk about how you guys can go do the experience. So we did do the full off-road course in the Cayenne, which was crazy. And, and also because the off-road course in the Cayenne was on the exact same all-season tires my wife has on her Cayenne. So I know those tires.
This has gotten Todd thinking. We're not going to reveal anything from the episode, but it's gotten Todd thinking.
And then the 992 through all the exercises, they have a ton of very different skill sets packed into one area. And the one thing that you'd mentioned, and you may want to add to this, but the one thing you'd mentioned that I found very interesting about their approach, from the minute we walked in the door, everybody related to the driving experience said to us, while this is obviously the Porsche Experience Center, the reason you're here to get in a car is to leave with more driver skill. It wasn't to leave with more lust for Porsche, even though, look, that's happening.
Look, I walked in the door and I instantly felt home. Like, I'm home. Hi, everybody.
It was difficult. You were one of the last people to leave. We were practically towing you out of the door.
Pretty much.
But that's because it's you. They really want you to figure out, okay, let's drive better. And they're worried about all the things we talk about, your eyes, your ability to pay attention, your understanding of weight shift, what do you do under emergency braking, things like, there's so many skill sets packed into one. It's almost like you're paying for advanced driver's ed and you happen to be in a Porsche. I was very impressed with that approach from them because I was concerned, I think we all could be, that it was going to be the hard sell of, can you believe the Porsche does this? There was none of that. It was, let's do these skills in these cars.
You've got to go see these great folks there right at the Atlanta Airport. If you've got an afternoon to kill, one Porsche drive, OPD, go see them. And then we had that Friday dinner after we were done shooting at 356 Restaurant. So guess why that was named? I was trying to figure out, okay, so what sort of cuisine, what sort of food can you expect at the 356 Restaurant?
Yes.
And it was described to me as sort of, you know, a German flair with Southern cooking involved. And so I thought the best way to describe the cuisine there is schnitzel and grits. I think it should be a menu item, schnitzel and grits, baby.
You mentioned that to Frank, and I think it stopped him halfway. He wasn't even sure how to respond to that idea. And I agree, it should be a menu item just because that says exactly what they do.
Don't you think they do it well. It's German food with a Southern twist.
Is that a bluegrass band? Schnitzel and grits.
Anyway. We need to come up with some songs for them. Thanks to Mercedes-Benz North America, who loaned us for the road tour and for the rest of the meetup with a 2020 AMG GTC. Delightful.
Yeah.
And a 2019 AMG E63S wagon that has 603 horsepower. As a matter of fact, it has more horsepower than the GTC.
Yeah.
And she's fast and she's angry.
It was cool. Fast blasts of both of those cars coming up. Yeah.
So then we had a Saturday drive, which was, you know, even though we had some rainy weather, I think everybody had a blast. What did we count? 29 cars and 40 folks at lunch?
Insane fog in the morning drive where the car that's, you know, 5-6 car lengths ahead of you suddenly is lost. You have no idea. It just vanishes into white, two car lengths in front of the car, and the car in front of you that was there a minute ago, even though it has its lights on, is gone.
Well, now imagine this with a twisty road you don't know.
Absolutely.
That has the wet leaves. You know how when leaves get wet, they're sort of plastered on the road like wallpaper, and it turns into like a slip and slide.
Yes.
It's like slick vinyl when you go over them. And so, yeah, that was fun in a, you know, GTC with Michelin Pilot Sport Cup 2s.
Yes, it was
very
interesting. It was a much bigger driver's challenge than I anticipated from that drive. The roads were very cool, so thanks to Georgia for making great roads. After lunch, though, we had a kind of an extended drive. We did a short one, and then we had a longer one, and the roads got better. At least the visibility got better. So we ended up with some really good drive time on Saturday, which was very fun.
So then on Sunday morning, we went to the Caffeine and Exotics meetup. So that is in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And it's usually the Caffeine and Octane, you know, the once a month, huge 1,000 car, everybody bring your ride kind of thing. And, you know, there's factions of cars and genres and decades you can find at this event.
All everyone insanely said to us the
huge.
Entire time was, you guys have to come back for the real one. Everybody said that over and over. So clearly we're supposed to come back.
So we ran into some people we know and had a great time. Thank you guys for coming out to that shoot. And then we had some lunch, went back up the road to shoot both Mercedes-Benzes, ran to dinner with friends because we were running out of daylight, crashed into bed, and flew home on Monday. Here we are.
And now we're recording a podcast because it was a week. It was quite a week. But here's the thing I love about it. We came away with two full episodes of television in the can for season 6 that I'm very excited by. The pickups and the Porsche experience, both are in the can. And we had a fantastic meetup with you guys. It was awesome to see. The outer rim of folks that came was D.C. Think about this. We were in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
D.C., Detroit, Colorado, Austin, and Florida. That was the circle of the farthest out people came from. So they all came in, and it was great. It was great to meet many of you. Some of you are patrons and on Discord. We only know you by your avatar, and now we know your face and your name, which is cool. Met so many great people. It was just fun to see that community in action and to have people. Even when you and I weren't sitting at a table talking to somebody, everybody's talking to everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody's making new friends and talking about cars and talking about the drive or what are we doing next. And that's so much about what this is about for us, and we're thrilled that it worked.
I think y'all are thinking about what sort of flavors y'all are going to linger in your mouth after schnitzel and grits meals.
Y'all, well done, sir.
The weather's changing, but the sun is still out, and it's baking your car's interior.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
You might not be buying a car right now, but you're probably still looking. We're all looking all the time, and it seems like there's always a new place to search. That's why we love autotempest.com.
With Auto Tempest, you can only enter your search one time and see results from Cars.com, eBay, all of Craigslist, and many more. Or you can jump to Auto Trader or Car Gurus without entering anything new. Your same search on a new site.
So if you're looking for fun or you need a car right now, don't search all over. Start at Autotempest.com. All the cars, one search.
We have kind of a unique and almost difficult car debate right now for Greg writing to us from Massachusetts. He's writing in and saying that his partner, who he loves, she's awesome. He has so many nice things to say about her. But then he explains how much he loves her and how very compatible they are. But he would also describe her as completely indifferent to cars and his love for cars. She's just indifferent to it. She doesn't feel any way about it at all. He changes cars. She just doesn't care. He describes her as a zombie commuter, which is a term we've used here before. So what do we do for a different car for her, to the point that he's saying, and by the way, I'm waving and saying hello to you anyway because I think you are listening, but he's saying,
you think so?
He thinks she's so indifferent she won't even listen to this episode when we bring it up.
Greg, thanks for writing to us. And the email says this. He says, this particular bait is for my partner who's in full alignment with the mindless driving robots we all loathe in so many capacities. She doesn't understand the car disease so much with the ambivalence that is her native state with the myriad of questionable car decisions he has made. His overarching goal with this debate is to find a car that will secretly and covertly push her towards learning about driving enjoyment without consciously knowing it is happening. He says, tangentially, he drives her car frequently, so he semi-selfishly wants her to be in something fun.
Okay, yeah.
Now, Greg's a doctoral student in psychology, so oftentimes he will take her car to class or clinical placements since she can walk to work.
Okay.
Now, she drives a Honda Fit. She leases it for $206 a month. She's got 4 months left on the lease, and she loves how squishy it is. I've never heard a Fit described as squishy.
Well, but what this says right away, what this says right away is that a stiff handling car is not going to cut it here.
His car is an 01 Tacoma 4x4 winter beater, and he's also got an NB second generation Miata with the Flying Miata everything except for the power.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So a lot of parts. They're in Massachusetts, as Todd said. They frequently drive in Vermont, about 50%, you know, urban to rural back roads.
Yeah.
She's 26, he's 27, and, you know, he's mentioned she can walk to work, and, you know, less than 3 miles a day on snowy winter days.
Mm-hmm.
When he drives the car, it ranges from 40 to 100 miles a day.
Yeah.
So they need four doors, an automatic, high miles to gallon, no sedans, so we're talking hatchback or CUV, something small but tall. Small and tall.
Yep.
No rear-wheel drive, no kids, and maybe a dog coming in the next year. And the budget, you probably got the idea, about $250 to $300 a month leased, or $10,000 to $20,000 new certified pre-owned.
Yep.
And again, she cares so little that leasing makes sense for her.
Okay.
That
makes sense for others, too. But
it does,
case,
it does.
It's just, she is in that appliance, it needs to work place. And she's coming out of a lease on the Honda Fit, so it makes sense to her in that regard. So we can stay in lease and be great.
Well, he says, to summarize, he loves his partner very much. She is incredibly intelligent, capable. He says, with cars, she genuinely could not care less and has no active interest in driving.
Okay.
So he doesn't mind that. He never expects her to join in his enthusiasm. But, you know, why pay money for a car that you can't articulate anything enjoyable about the driving experience?
Mm-hmm.
And he, Greg, you're thinking that many listeners might be in the same boat. We agree with you.
Yeah.
And since you're in psychology, I want to start the conversation with this. It's something you and I talked about a long time ago, and I actually don't remember the particular subject you and I were talking about.
Okay, all right.
But it had to do with how you related something to your wife. She wasn't getting the particular angle you were coming from about something. And again, I can't remember what the particular subject was, but I remember the result of the conversation.
Okay.
And it was something along the lines of, when you say this, I feel this.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't occur to her ever. And she said, I had no idea you felt that way when I thought or said this about the thing you care about.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was revelatory for her.
Do you remember that conversation
a while back?
Well, but that's the thing, though. These terms you're using, this is a common reality in relationships. Because either side of the equation will say whatever. And the other side hears and feels a certain thing as a result of that is not intended.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the natural reaction of the person that said whatever it was is, I didn't mean that at all. But that doesn't help. You have to empathize with the feeling that it's triggered in your partner and realize it's not rational, but it's triggered that feeling. So I need to be aware of the fact that this statement or these kind of commentary makes this kind of response, and I need to be, like I say, empathetic, and I need to work around that problem and assess it right.
Okay.
We're dealing with different language here in Greg's case because
he
speaks car and the woman in his life does not.
It's a t-shirt. I speak car.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
But I also want to say this to you, Greg. Look, I have a good friend whose wife is a marriage and family therapist.
Okay.
And they've had to put up boundaries in the kind of things she can say to him before she becomes his therapist trying to manipulate things for the benefit of their marriage. He's having none of it.
Uh-huh.
So they've had to just be like, baby, I love you. Stop it. Because you're not gonna be my therapist and therapize me to what it, you're gonna be my wife.
Therapize me.
Interesting.
I'm about to therapize you.
I'm gonna get all therapeutic up in here. Anyway, so I wonder if the lovely woman in your life is concerned about the fact that you're a psychologist in a conversation like this. I just wonder. But I also want to say to you, is this car really gonna bring her around? You may want to let that go. Honestly, you may want to let it go. I have some recommendations that I actually think will engage her in driving, but I don't know that it's going to turn the tide to make her into a person who likes driving. And I see those as two different steps. Being more engaged in it is something that we feel like we've seen so many people on phones in the past week. It's been astronomical. Phones while driving, by the way. Getting people more engaged is a huge, big step. If you can get there and she thinks her new car is cool, I think that's a huge victory. I think shooting for the, and now she likes driving, I think that's too many steps at once.
As my mom always said to me, Paul, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yes, very true.
I always think about that, and I associate it with my mom, even though that's been around. That saying has been around,
forever.
Right? And it occurs to me here, Greg, that I don't want to end the conversation or even come to a conclusion here that here's the car that will solve the thing, and suddenly you'll graduate, and you know the doors will open, and you'll see it, and yay. I don't think that's what you're going for either. I don't get that. I'm not saying that. But I'm almost back to where, you know, I was thinking, when you say this, I feel that. And for your partner to not realize that is revelatory. So I want to start at just the getting something right. And this is, as car enthusiasts, for me, I'll speak for me, first of all, it's adrenaline. Speed gives me adrenaline. But getting something right, getting a series of corners or connecting this with a car does it right. So therefore, I'm not even going to recommend something that handles well for you. Because some people connect with a car and it's the luxurious ride and the environment that you're in and the cocoon shape and the, it's my personal, you know, hyperbaric chamber
on my
way to work. And it insulates me from all the stuff that I'm going to have to deal with when I get to work. That could be as therapeutic as tearing through a corner and clipping the apex onto your favorite on-ramp and backing off, you know, at 90 miles an hour as you merge secretly with traffic and nobody's the wiser. So I want you to relate the feel of something she's interested in to the feel of we car enthusiasts when we're driving.
Okay.
What is it, the activity that she has? Is it sports? Is it presenting? Is it the rush she gets when presenting to a large audience? That's also a huge rush. I've experienced the same thing. You get done and you feel like I've nailed that. They've connected with me. I got the audience laughing and they're clapping at the end. That's a victory. And I get the same rush.
They're throwing roses. It's
seriously
awesome. Yeah.
When you end some boring speech to a group, whether it's a, you know, a small group of, you know, 2 to 8 people or a room full of 50 to 100 people, and they end up clapping at the end, that's just like, wow.
You did something right.
I connected something with you guys, and you were listening. I didn't put you to sleep. That's a victory right there. So what is it that she relates to that gives her the feeling that we get when we drive? And I'm saying the royal we, the collective we, all of us.
I totally get it. Yeah, for sure.
What is that in her? That wasn't mentioned in your email, because it could be some car that handles well. It could be some car that's a cocoon.
True.
Where is she on that driving spectrum? And again, this is going to be step one. You're just planting seeds.
Completely agree.
So first you've got to find that thing out and then start to relate it. Okay, so what is that feeling in car form of her? What you know, that feeling, the thing she's passionate about that she won't shut up about when, you know what I mean? Because Todd and I just won't shut up about cars.
You're right. No,
I get it. Into your favorite friends and you're like,
Totally.
The thing you're talking about, I get it. Thank you for sharing.
Please stop.
Stop telling me about the thing you're passionate about, because, man, I wish I had something I was passionate about. And I'm kind of jealous. You're passionate about this thing in your life and wish I had that. What is that in her? And then start to relate that. Okay, what kind of car would give her that feeling?
Okay. All right.
We, you know, for us, it's acceleration. We laugh and giggle like idiots. And, you know, we go around a corner and you connect that. And you're like, yeah, I felt the shoulder of the tire on that one. Top that, everyone.
We do have these conversations,
you know,
with those exact words. It's frightening.
I dare you to top that. You know what it is? So I want to get to that in her rather than approach of, honey, I think I've got a car for you. Because why will that matter until you connect the dots for her?
Okay.
First of all, you're pulling that out, listening to her. What is that? And then connect the dots to, okay, so that feeling that you've identified, that thing that gives you that cool rush that you like, I've been thinking about this car.
Okay.
I'm wondering if that'll kind of give you that same feeling. I'm wondering if it'll kind of do the same thing for you. Because car enthusiasts love cars for a myriad of different reasons.
Sure. Yeah.
And a myriad of different feelings. We car enthusiast, canyon driving, track rat nerds.
Yes.
Love
That's
to,
us.
You know, carve a corner, or, you know, feel the difference between 18s and 19s or whatever that is. You know what I mean?
These conversations all have happened. Every single one of them has happened.
They don't stop either. We keep coming back around to them like, there's more words to say about that. Let me add now.
450 plus podcasts. Clearly there's more words. Yeah.
That's where I'm at with you and she. And it's going to be a slow process.
Okay.
Because again, you can't come to dealer and be like, a GTI. That's the car. She'd be like, and? What is it about you weirdos and your GTIs that you love?
Sure.
I don't get it. I don't care. Because you're going to be doing the same thing about whatever passion, you know, she's passionate about. You'd be like, I don't get it. I'm fine talking in front of an audience, and I'm bored, and they're bored, and we're all bored. I don't know. I'm making stuff up.
But you, you're doing. You know what I mean. Yeah, for sure. That's good stuff. I actually have a kind of car I think you should look at very seriously. You want hatchback.
Monster truck?
Exactly. That we're done. Yeah, exactly. Big lifted Wrangler. That's what she needs. And she's going to be thrilled.
Sniper shot.
Yeah. Anyway, well done. No, actually, I think she may be the perfect buyer for one type of car. And I actually think it might work for you, because the thing I want to connect with here, and I wish we had her name, but the thing I want to connect with here is she needs something that is unique and different, where it's like, huh, that's like this in this car. That's different.
Yeah.
Okay.
That particular thing, that feature?
I think she's perfect for an electric car, because electric cars are great to lease, because the technology is changing so fast that when the lease is over, you're going to want to get rid of that car anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So lease an electric car. And I'm going to run through some usual suspects here. I don't think your budget allows you a Model 3.
I agree.
Which is too bad, because the thing that the Model 3 does very well is that people, I have met many of them, and this is true of Teslas in general, but the Model 3, of course, being the most affordable. The thing that the Teslas do is that people that I have met that have not cared about cars prior are now really in love with their Tesla. I've watched that pattern happen. In the same way that I didn't care about cell phones until I got a smartphone, and now my phone is my favorite thing. It's the same kind of thing. Okay? There were plenty of phone geeks before smartphones existed.
Yeah.
There were plenty of them.
Yeah.
It's just it wasn't most of us. Now we've all got a smartphone. It's the greatest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think it's electric cars. What I like about this for both of you is I think it's different enough that it will engage her. I think it's different enough it will also engage you. These are not cars you buy because they're amazing to drive. However, all, and I do want to say all, this is not a Tesla-specific thing, all electric cars have got surprising amount of speed and pickup in little commute situations because they have that electric torque. And because they're silent, and because they are all, the suspension of all of them is set up to be soft. They're dealing with batteries, and in many cases, they're set up on economy car chassis, so she likes the squishy feel of her Honda Fit.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
The only one that I think is a wild card here is the used BMW i3.
Okay.
The reason it's a wild card is because you said no rear-wheel drive. Now, this is not exactly a rear-wheel drive performance car. I don't think it's going to get anybody into trouble. That's probably why you're avoiding rear-wheel drive. But the i3 is really cool, and you can now get used ones for really cheap. Okay?
This is interesting.
But
I'm glad you're exploring this.
I think you really need to drive the brand-new, don't get the first-gen, brand-new second-gen Nissan Leaf.
Okay.
And the brand new Chevy Bolt.
I was going to say, absolutely.
They're both. You can go in right now and spec one. They will be thrilled to see you. Okay? They'll be thrilled you're there. All right? For both of those cars. They've got plenty of range that if you need to use it, Greg, and do your commute, you're going to be fine. But also, she goes 3 miles unless the weather's bad. She walks unless the weather's bad.
Yeah.
That's your electric car drive right there. It's perfect. Heated seats, tons of tech. Good screens, nice interaction. I really think your next car should be a leased electric car that in 2 or 3 years you can give the technology back and have a real conversation then about where are we?
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
it's so different than anything either one of you have experienced. I think it's going to engage new conversation that might lead to a surprising car for either one of you down the line.
Greg, would you agree that if your partner looks forward to being in her car for any reason whatsoever,
yes.
it's a win?
Yes.
Because what
totally
if she
agree.
Wants to be in her car for tech? For
yeah,
tech purposes?
For sure.
Or
for sure.
the
yeah.
cool screen startup and the screen software is launching and then it goes into tech mode and she gets her favorite news or you know, podcast or whatever she likes to listen to in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
What if that starts to feed an interest and suddenly she wants to be in her car and chooses it over walking.
Sure.
Wouldn't you call that a win?
Yeah.
Because that's a part of car enthusiasm and car love, too.
Agreed. Agreed. That's great.
There's drag racers. There's stunts. There's monster trucks. There's pickup trucks in Atlanta. There's you name it.
I saw a couple of pretty amazing donks in Atlanta. I saw
they're good at donks in Atlanta, by the way. They're good at this.
I saw a Maxima on wagon wheels, my friend. Wagon wheel. Downtown Atlanta, going down a road that we had driven in the trucks and I knew was bumpy, and he had no clearance on his chrome 30-something wagon wheels on his Maxima, and I thought, that's a series of bad decisions, but I'm still excited to see it drive by.
I saw a donked Polaris slingshot with LED lights.
I saw him,
on
too.
Every surface.
I saw him, too.
And
I think you could see him from space.
The shattering bass coming out of that thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could put as many speakers in a slingshot.
I think all the body panels are now just speakers.
I think he was towing something that was an amp.
I saw him as well, and I do think you could see him from space. Atlanta was awesome. In fact, one of the crazy things that we discovered in Atlanta, and if you've ever driven in downtown Atlanta, you know this. Apparently, there's no such thing as jaywalking.
No, it doesn't exist.
And I'm talking everybody. I'm talking people in business suits would just wander out in the middle of a block and count on me in a pickup with this grill that's 7 feet tall to see them and not hit them.
Well, there's a surprising lack of guilt for doing so. You just step out in front of a car.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's not the wisest decision.
I agree. But we saw it a lot in downtown Atlanta.
Yeah.
So it isn't actually a high-speed canyon run of an episode, but we're very excited to share. We should do some questions while we're here.
We should. There's a question from Kelvin Chen here on Facebook that ties into our debate with Greg. He's asking, should I start using public transportation considering the fact his commute to work is so short, his car's oil temp doesn't have enough time to get up to operating temperature? Yes, at least 180, 160, but definitely 180 or higher. 5 miles one way isn't really long enough to get the car warm. You want to get it running, driving for at least 10 minutes. Not running, but at least in motion. And the best way to get it warm is, of course, to start your car and put it in gear and drive away.
Yes.
That's the fastest way you can get it warm up to operating temperature. But then you're already at work. So I thought about, you didn't name your car here, but, electric cars are going to overcome these tiny short commutes when the weather is super bad. You've got the short commute. There is that option.
Yep.
Now, to your question, you're laying out the breadcrumbs, the Skittles. Here's the M&Ms in a line over two scooters.
Yeah.
You're laying these out like,
don't get on a scooter. We saw that in Atlanta. People flying by at full speed. No
solving
helmet.
The last mile of transportation
all
problem.
Bad. All
no,
bad.
I don't recommend that. Walking is healthy. Walking is good. Bicycling is good. If it's bad weather, try public transportation. If it just doesn't suit you, then you can do the car thing. Is it ultimately going to destroy your car? I don't think so. It's not the healthiest for it. But
no, it's not.
I'm in full agreement with you, but there are some ways you can get around this if it does truly worry you. And maybe you pick up like a Fiat 500e for
there you go.
Super duper cheap.
Are they selling those? Because I feel like they only leased them. I don't know if they're actually for sale.
Okay.
But
I have to confirm that, similar
world.
What about
anyway.
Something super duper cheap or very early Leaf.
The BMW i3s are worth nothing.
I mean, you get an electric car just to solve a commute problem, a short commute problem.
Yeah.
Well, then
I
there's parking and insurance and taxes
different
and all
problem.
That stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you didn't write about those things. Just kidding.
Let's see. Mystic Negro. George, we met you at the Atlanta meetup. It was such a pleasure to
super
meet you
cool.
and your wife. It was
yeah.
very fun. He said he learned on Sunday that there's no way to close the trunk of an E63 wagon from the inside in case of accidental opening. And this is one of his major pet peeves. It annoys him on his BMW because apparently the BMW that he has, the trunk just likes to open. So are there any obvious but apparent missing things that we notice on cars that drive us nuts? In a similar vein, George, I will say this to you. The number of cars now that don't actually have a obviously placed button on the trunk or hatch to open it. It should be dead center underneath the logo.
Mm-hmm.
This is where that goes, and it should exist.
Should be like the big red easy button, like boom,
almost.
Trunk.
The number, because we've all gone to key fobs for the trunks, and because most cars have got that release button on the inside, by the way, generally, that even if it's a powered gate, it doesn't have a button that then closes it again, which is annoying. But because we've all gone to key fobs, manufacturers have just, my FRS was an example. They just stopped putting buttons.
Mm-hmm.
The number of times, every time we have a WRX, it catches us out. The WRX right now.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, WRX, it's fairly straightforward. The Impreza, you would think they would just have this. You can hit the button on the inside, or you can hit the button on the fob, but you cannot walk up and hit a button and open the trunk from the lid.
Mm.
Why not? That drives me insane. Maybe I am old school, but it drives me insane. Also, I really genuinely hate the electric parking brake buttons. I've grown to loathe them.
Really? I've grown to like them a little bit more and more.
I've grown to loathe them. And thank God we have a universal at symbol that we know where to get it. But the start-stop button drives me nuts too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I want to jam a screwdriver
through
them.
I know the reasons for it. I understand that if you're sitting in stop-and-go traffic, it helps. The rumbling diesel sound that is associated with most cars on start-stop and how long it takes them to do it, it drives me nuts and I turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize I'm not normal there. But I'm telling you, trunk buttons and parking brakes – It's starting to get my hackles up.
Instagram, Finn Peters says, is there a car that isn't made anymore, but you want to come back? We want it to come back. Well, of course, 928s. I think Porsche should consider more GT cars, you know, the Porsche 929, to compete directly against the Mercedes GTC that I have fallen in love with.
Mm.
Oh, my gosh. I am... I thought I was sort
it's
of
all bad.
Cheating on Porsche to love this car this much.
And now you don't care.
No,
you just don't care. Yeah.
Gorgeous from every angle. I was entranced following this car. I was in the wagon, you were in the GTC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Front, rear, I don't care. Gorgeous. I'm loving this car anymore. But yes, I think more GT cars would be great. It's just they're not as useful as what people are buying. Mm-hmm. CUVs, SUVs, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. They're just not as useful. They're just more passion kinds of cars. So that's what I'm looking for. And Finn, I'm thinking about the future of electric cars as far as the emotion that we need to get out of them. Because everybody associates Tesla to a lesser degree, but more about efficiency rather than fun.
Oh, definitely.
And that's the association and perception of electric cars. Oh, you got an electric car. You're Mr. Boring. No, there will be some electric cars that will be genuinely fun.
And
like I said, Tesla is a grand exception to that. We even found the Bolt fun, but in a kind of a different way. And it's still sort of like
it does
the best
what it
car
does
for ride
very,
sharing
very
ever
well.
Built.
It really does what it does well, for sure.
Yep, yep. All right, what other questions you got on here?
Kelly Kenworthy says on Facebook, what lateral G number do we think the average is the average person's comfort level? He read somewhere that the average driver is freaked out, like this is the edge of control at 0.4 G. And his description, if given the option of I'm going to hit a tree or I have to make a 0.4 G corner, they're going to hit the tree. I have no idea where that comes from. But I will say this. I actually do think that if you have a passenger in the, riding along with you and you get about half a G, most passengers that are not used to driving in a fast car are going to believe the car is about to skitter off the road. I think it is about half a G because I find that my tolerance level where it starts to feel I'm really doing something here is close to a G, but I feel like I'm halfway to my tolerance. Look, this is all just butt dyno stuff here. I feel like I'm halfway to my tolerance level when the average driver passenger is sitting next to me kind of going, I need to hang on to something. I do think most people have no idea how capable their car – I don't care what your car is – how capable it is with modern tires. It's one of the things I like about autocross. I've told the joke before about taking my dad to a track day, and he was just completely out of his depth because every car we got into was more capable than he ever imagined. I think that's most people. We as we do the commute zombie thing and we drive mostly in straight lines or slowly we turn left or right at the light, we don't understand that a modern car can get most of the way to a full G. A modern just whatever can do 0.85 G.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Which is sports car territory of 15 years ago. When the Lotus came out and the Lotus Elise pulled 1G on the skid pad, the entire automotive world just kind of caught its breath for a second and went, that's possible in a street car?
Right, right.
And now 1G is a lot of things can do it, and the major street cars are doing 1.25.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, so everything's come up. But anyway.
I've noticed that there's so many people that take corners and long freeway connector ramps needing to sit bolt upright. it's okay if it pushes you into the seat just a little bit. It's okay if you're not perfectly, your torso's perfectly upright during the entire corner, and so we got to slow way down past the speed limit. And then, you know, do you see traffic backing up behind you? Yeah, that's your first indication.
That's your problem. Yeah, that you did that, yes.
Sir J Day on Instagram recently switched to all-season tires on 18s from Subber Rubber on 19s. And is amazed at the driving difference. He says, more spongy feel and more tram line tendencies. Is there any insight or tire science on this? Suggestions for making the car feel more planted as it was with the summer setup? Well, keep in mind, the sidewall is a component of your suspension.
Yes.
Inherently.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of engineers utilize, that's why from the factory, they either utilize or don't utilize that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are in every sense, but that's why they spec certain wheels and tires. You know, you want more this or that out of the car, you can upgrade to 21s or 20s, whatever.
Yeah.
But keep in mind that when you go to 18s and, you know, for, you know, winter driving, you want a little bit more tire splay. You want those tread blocks to, you know, kind of splay out a little bit more. You're definitely affecting feel. The biggest thing you can do is air pressure. But I'm not recommending you crank up air pressures past a recommended manufacturer limit just so you can get a feel back out of, you know, what you're used to. That's not a good idea. You want to be within the recommended range, but you can definitely feel it. So I would say try air pressures to feel what your car is doing, but then bring them back to within the tolerance for manufacturer specs for the temperature you're driving at. And honestly, sometimes it's going to have to be something you deal with because you're on a completely different tire, completely different driving conditions.
Yes.
And you need those, you know, those tire, those tread blocks to kind of fan out, spread out a little bit more and do their job a little bit more effectively than, you know, when you've got a hot road on a hot day.
It's definitely
a different condition. So air pressures, you can feel it, but I don't recommend keeping it there like, oh, well, that gives me the feel of summer driving, but it's not suited for the conditions. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the softer, as you get into softer rubber for like winter tires, for example, that they just, they're fundamentally softer, but you deal with that because you get the grip out of it. That is definitely the trade-off.
You've got the siping and all that.
Totally. Anthony asked an interesting question. You and I were debating this recently for a few-hour drive that we have. What is the mileage or time differential or maximum where we decide we're going to fly rather than drive? And his example is like Dallas to Houston is a 3-hour drive. I've done that drive many times. Dallas to Houston is a 3-hour drive, or it's a 1-hour flight, but you've got airport time about this. You've got to drive to the airport. You've got to sit in the airport. Then you have to fly for an hour. Then you have to do the reverse on the other side. I feel like the switchover is 5-6 hours.
Yeah, I'm right
where,
in there. Yeah.
Where the actual time savings flops. If it's 5 or 6 hours of driving, personally, I would most of the time do the drive Dallas to Houston because I think by the time you drive to the airport, that's an hour just driving to the airport.
Well, and there's wait times on top
totally.
Of that. Totally.
So I think at 5 or 6 hours, most of the time, that's when it starts to flop where now I could probably do this better flying. But, I mean, your mileage will vary directly.
Last question for me here from C. Erickson 648 asks, is there a best time of year to purchase a new car? For reference, he lives in Nebraska and snow is a factor, so he's not sure if it's best to look prior to winter being in full force or if it makes no difference. I think, yes, there is a good time of year, and the time of year that we're currently in right now when we're recording this is October, so late in the year of 2019. And, you know, there's all kinds of dealer discounts and we're trying to move inventory and all that kind of stuff. Ultimately, what you're beholden to is market forces for the particular car you're shopping for.
If
it's an expensive car and they're keeping their value, that remains pretty much in force all year round. But the big thing you can chase is how long a car has sat on the market.
Yep.
And that's what you and I are going to be chasing for the Phaeton and the Pickle Fork.
Yes, we are.
How long a car has sat there on sale means nobody's really interested in that one for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
But if you keep watching things and, okay, that car sat there for a while, they might be willing to deal.
My Lotus was that way. Yeah. When
so
I bought my Lotus, it'd be on sale for a bit.
Almost a better indicator than, well, you know, it's wintertime, nobody's buying sports cars. Well, I don't know that people would give you $5,000 off their asking price. I don't know that people price
it that
way. Not
huge, but I do think the middle of the winter is time to buy a convertible. The middle of the winter is time to buy a rear-wheel drive sports
car.
It definitely can be. Especially if you're buying in a snowy climate. If they want to make their money, they need to sell it in May.
Yeah.
If it's on sale in December, that's somebody that needs to get rid of that sports car.
I mean, it does, you know, you see the lawnmowers in front of Home Depot, and then it changes the barbecue grills, and then the snowblowers come out. And,
well done, sir.
You know, you can kind of tell. So use the Home Depot gauge,
You gauge seasons based on Home Depot. Some people do it on McDonald's or Starbucks. You gauge it on what's in front of Home Depot.
It's the products sitting in the parking lot at Home Depot
that
are all bicycle locked together.
That's good.
What is out there? Is it patio furniture? Time to buy a convertible.
Speaking of bicycle locks, my last question, a little bit off topic. Facebook, Jake is asking, recommendations for someone wanting to give mountain biking a try. Good first bike for under $5,000. Honestly, Jake, if you can spend as much as $5,000, you have options.
Yeah.
Honestly, most of the really good new bikes start about, because I shopped and it was above my budget, start about $3,000, $3,500 and go up to $5,000. Now, above $5,000, there's tons of stuff, carbon frames, all kinds of madness. I would say shop for something that only has one front cog and a bunch of rear cogs. Shop for components. Talk to the people that you're buying a bike from about the higher end components on the lower end frames. You're going to prefer having really good braking. You're going to prefer having a really good drivetrain. I mean, honestly, I like Santa Cruz's. I have a Kona and I love that. Specialized makes great stuff. You're a big fan of Cannondale. All of these are good. There's a lot of people here that ride Rocky Mountains. There's a great company called Pivot, but I've never seen one of their bikes for less than $5,000. Whereas Santa Cruz, you get great Santa Cruz's, the Nomad and others are available out there for less than $5,000. So you've got lots of options, but ask a lot of questions about what kind of components are these. So that's one thing. You said helmet under $500, you have your pick, man. You don't need to spend that kind of money on a helmet. I mean, spend money on a helmet, please do. But I mean, spend $100, spend $200 at the most. Get a helmet that fits you. Sometimes they have different levels of coverage. I try to wear one with quite a bit of coverage. I've even thought about I should get a face mask because my face, in spite of the fact of being a face for radio, as you can hear, does wind up on camera quite a bit. So they should think about that. Other equipment, I would actually get a dedicated backpack for water. If you're going to do downhill, you need to buy the body armor. If you're not going to do downhill, don't worry about it. I mean, like dedicated downhill.
The dedicated
those
super
folks,
duper,
you
yeah.
want the body
the flow
armor.
Trails,
and you want a little bit different bike if you're going to do that. But those are the main things I would say. And also get yourself the dedicated biking shorts with the internal padding. Now I'm going real personal, but do that.
Nice.
Have the debate. You ride with the clip-in pedals, and I don't. So what do
it's
you prefer,
debate.
Jake? Honestly, I love not being clipped in, but you swear by it. And everybody I ride with is 50-50.
Exactly.
So don't believe anybody's commentary on you must be one or the other. Do what feels right for you there.
Quick shout out to Keith, who spotted me in the Atlanta airport I was getting coffee, and he said he was just at Outer Bike in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Oh, wow.
Got to ride some e-bikes and a bunch of other stuff. So thank you for saying
very
hi.
Cool.
If you spot us in an airport or somewhere else, please say hello. Love to
for
meet
sure.
people and,
absolutely.
And say hello. So yeah, please do that. And Keith, thanks for saying something. I was not quite myself because I hadn't had coffee yet.
You had not, yes.
I was a little bleary-eyed. Anyway, thank you guys for all your questions. As always, thank you for coming to the meetups. We really had just such a great time.
It was great. It was really cool.
Meeting people as well. So we're looking forward to next time, everyone. Cheers.